Welcome back.
This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. With the first in the nation primary swirling around us, we turn to the spread of the Tea Party, circa 1774. We're talking about the Annapolis Tea Party, the New York Tea Party, and other protests that boiled over in the colonies from Maine to North Carolina. These copycat protests were buried by the legendary 92,000 pounds shoved overboard in Boston. Historian Joseph Cummins highlights the little-known but significance of the original Tea Party craze in a new book called 10 Tea Parties, Patriotic Protests That History Forgot. Joseph Cummins, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks a lot, Virginia. I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, let's begin with the tea parties by numbers. Help us understand what an important commodity tea was in the British Empire of the colonial era.
Well, tea was basically to the American colonists the way coffee is to us today. In 1773, when the tea parties began, there were about 3 million American colonists, and 1 million of them, by our best estimates, drank tea twice a day. So it was an extremely important commodity to them. One of the stories I relate in the book is how a Swedish scientist visiting America was noticed how discolored everyone's teeth was, especially the women's teeth. And he said, well, they must be just drinking so much tea. They're absolute tea sots, as he put it. So they could not do without the tea. So it was very big for them.
Well, and you also give us the history of the East India Tea Company. Just how big and influential was it in the British economy?
Well, you know, imagine a Google or a Microsoft that has the power to declare war, make peace treaties, raise its own army, and basically conquer countries. And that was what the British East India Company did. And this was the reason, actually, probably for the beginning of the Revolutionary War as well as the beginning of the Tea Party, is that the British East India Company, this huge corporation, was failing. And it owed hundreds of thousands of pounds to the British government. And the British allowed them to sell tea to America at a much cheaper price than the Americans were buying their tea. Most Americans at the time were buying their tea from smugglers. And so they were about to undercut the smugglers' prices by selling tea that was much cheaper, contrary to most people's what most people were taught in school, which was that the price of tea was raised. In fact, the price of tea was lowered quite a bit.
Well, so it was the first too-big-to-fail corporation that was sort of bailed out by a government.
By the government, right? Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
And, of course, this led to the events of the Boston Tea Party. Many of us know that history, but you give it in such a detailed and terrific way. But I'm going to speed through that to get to some of the others. But how about the character of Boston, the original Tea Party, which already had a history of gang violence? Was that particular to Boston?
Yeah, it was particular to Boston. It had a history of protests which led to mobs clashing with each other on Guy Fawkes Day in the streets of Boston. And the Sons of Liberty channeled these mobs towards agitation against the British, beginning with the Stamp Act and the Sugar Act and all the other taxes that were put on Boston. So it was fairly easy for them, therefore, in December of 1773 to channel this mob violence towards the tea that had come in on three tea ships into Boston Harbor in early December of 1773. But the interesting thing about the tea parties in Boston, of course, is that they were not as they have been portrayed in the school books. People were only rudimentarily disguised as Mohawk Indians. They weren't wearing big headdresses, and they weren't whooping and shouting. It was a very quiet protest with people wearing lampblack on their faces. And actually, tossing the tea overboard was quite hard work because, as you said, there was 92,000 pounds of tea, 340 chests of tea, each weighing 400 pounds. There was so much tea that when it was tossed in the harbor, it floated up in big haystacks and toppled back onto the ship. So, which is quite an image. So this was a lot of tea. It was worth $1 million in today's money, and the British East India Company did not take kindly to this happening. And yet, this didn't stop protesters in other cities in these forgotten tea parties to take part in their own protests.
Right, so this happened on December 16, 1773.
Right.
How long did it take the other colonies and the Brits to get the news?
Well, the Brits got the news in early January, but Paul Revere, in one of his also forgotten rides, actually went south, and he spread the news within a few days to New York City, and then someone else then took over and spread the news to Philadelphia. So, but by that time, Philadelphia had already had its own Tea Party, which began on December 27th, when they stopped a British ship coming into Philadelphia with actually 697 chests of tea. So twice as much tea as had arrived in Boston Harbor was being sent by the British East India Company to Philadelphia, and 8,000 people gathered at the old Independence Hall in down in Philadelphia, and they actually stopped the tea from coming in.
Historian Joseph Cummins is with us to talk about the other tea parties in Annapolis, Philly, and New Jersey after the Boston Tea Party. His new book is called 10 Tea Parties, Patriotic Protests That History Forgets. Okay, so these other colonies boycotted or destroyed or a few other punishing acts of tea. You write about the 10, but we'll give readers some surprises, but on to a couple of them. Annapolis, for example, what happened there?
Well, Annapolis is a very good example of showing the complexity of tea parties during the colonies, because of course it wasn't quite, as people put it today, where there were highly patriotic affairs. They were often mercantile affairs. American merchants were highly threatened by this cheap tea that was coming into the colonies, because they felt that it would undercut their own business of selling slightly more expensive tea. In Annapolis, a merchant named Anthony Stewart was actually framed by another merchant who planted tea on his ship, and then told the Sons of Liberty about it, who then forced Anthony Stewart to burn his own tea ship, actually right in front of his home on the Annapolis harbor, where his own wife was giving birth to their child, which shows you how tough they could be about tea in those days.
All right, so. And people were tarred and feathered. Boiling hot tea was poured down people's throats. How significant were these movements, these other movements, in sparking the revolution?
Well, I think that it's surprising that they've been forgotten, because I think without them there wouldn't have been a revolution, because what happened was the British attempted to isolate Boston right after the Boston Tea Party by closing down Boston Harbor and trying to force them to pay back the East India Company for all the money that was destroyed when the tea was tossed overboard. And these other colonies, one by one, all the way down to North Carolina and South Carolina, actually supported Boston and said, no, we're not going to let this happen. We're going to destroy tea. We're going to force you to come after us as well. And American colonists at that time were individuals. They were fractious. The North didn't like the South very much. But this was the very first time when Americans came together as one. And I think it was because of this unity that the British realized they had a lot of problems on their hand at that time.
How do the colonial tea parties compare with today's tea party?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think the tea parties at that time were more of a ground root, you know,
grassroots
movement.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, of independence. And I think they're probably a little more like the Occupy movements, actually, these days than they are like the tea party. They were much more inclusive, I think. In other words, you basically, if you wanted to join them, you could. And I think while they had the same goal as some of the Tea Party movements of today, i.e. to protest big government, they were a little bit more willing to have everyone join in and be a part.
Boston's Tea Party was so symbolic, so well organized, and really nonviolent.
Yes.
How might we view its place in history differently if some other proposals for the Boston Tea Party had come to pass? So what if the Sons of Liberty had torched the ships in the harbor there? Would that have been an act of war right then?
I think it would have been an act of war right then. And remember, at the time the Boston Tea Party was taking place, there were British warships in the harbor with their guns trained on these tea ships. And they showed some restraint, importantly, on not firing on these tea ships. So I think it was the beginning of American civil disobedience in that sense. And the thing that made the Tea Party part of our DNA in terms of American protest, because it was nonviolent, although, of course, with a mob, there's always a threat of violence lurking somewhere in the background.
Historian Joseph Cummins, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia. I appreciate it.
Joseph Cummins is author of books including Anything for a Vote and History's Great Untold Stories. His newest book highlights America's original Tea Party craze. It's called 10 Tea Parties, Patriotic Protests That History Forgot. You can find more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org. And you can also join our ongoing conversation on Facebook and on Twitter. Now stay with us for a lesson on the elements of a proper English tea. This is Word of Mouth on NHPR.